If AI can do the work for you, what's the point of learning? Today on The Learning Curve, we unpack what artificial intelligence really means for students, schools, and the skills that matter most.
Welcome to The Learning Curve, a Nordanger education podcast where we tackle the realities of schools, learning, parenting, technology, well-being, and everything that comes next. At the heart of our conversations are the things families wrestle with every day, the challenges, the trade-offs, and the big questions that can quietly sit in the back of your mind. So if you're a parent who's looking for a bit more clarity and who wants to feel a little less alone, perhaps, you're in the right place.
Few things have arrived with greater speed or caused more debate than artificial intelligence. Almost overnight, tools like ChatGPT, Claude, and Copilot have made it possible for students to generate essays, solve maths problems, summarize research, and even write computer code. To give you a sense of scale, ChatGPT reached 100 million users in just 2 months, making it one of the fastest adopted technologies in history. Which raises some big questions. If AI can do so much and so quickly, what are students actually meant to learn? What should schools allow and what should they limit? And perhaps most importantly, how do we make sure young people are using AI to think better rather than simply outsourcing their thinking? I'm Fu Reisenhofer, your host, and today, to help us unpack all of this, I'm joined by two guests who bring very different but complementary perspectives. Professor Rose Luckin is one of the world's leading experts on AI in education. She's Professor Emerita at the University College London, founder of Educate Ventures Research, and an advisor to governments, policymakers, and education organisations around the world. Rose is also working closely with Nord Anglia Education to help students and teachers navigate AI thoughtfully and critically. Rose, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure.
I'm also very pleased to be joined by Gobinda Manda, who is the head of computer science at Nord Anglia International School, Dubai. Gobinda works closely with students every day and has a front row seat to how young people are actually interacting with AI tools in the classroom. Gobinda, welcome to you as well.
Thank you for having me.
I think we can all agree, hopefully, that AI has entered the world and education incredibly quickly. So even just kind of 2 or 3 years ago, most schools weren't really talking about generative AI, whereas today, obviously, it is everywhere. So, Rose, I'd like to begin with you. In the past, schools have dealt with, you know, the advent of calculators, for example, Wikipedia, Google search engines and so forth, all these kind of technological breakthroughs. But AI, I think, feels a little bit different to those. Would you agree with that? And also from your perspective, why do you think AI has created such a sense of disruption?
It's a very good question. I think we need to remember when it comes to artificial intelligence that AI in the form of chatbots like ChatGPT or Copilot or Claude or whatever have been the fastest technology adoption story in history. You know, ChatGPT reached 100 million users in 2 months. It took Netflix more than 10 years to do that. So part of this is because the adoption, because we've been offered a consumer product version of AI through the various chatbots and tools that are now very common, and that was allowed to be used without people needing to pay for it. And so that means that we've seen a huge amount of adoption very, very quickly, and that includes amongst our students. And that kind of makes this a feel qualitatively different to some of the other challenges that have come along that were much more slowly paced. So I think the speed is a challenge, but I don't think that's a challenge in terms of feeling like we have to bring it into schools everywhere fast. I think we need to think very carefully about the purpose that we're going to use the AI to achieve. And particularly, we need to obviously help students who might be using these technologies use them safely and sensibly. So it is different because these technologies have been adopted very, very quickly, and we know that the vast majority of students are using them. And that really, I think, creates a particular sort of situation for us as educators.
But as I say, if we think carefully and we are clear about the purpose that we use these tools for, they can be extremely useful.
Mm.
So the speed piece is more of a pressure from the outside because of the availability of these technologies. But for us as educators, we need to think carefully and be very purpose-driven in what we actually do with these AI technologies in order to support students and to use them effectively within our institutions.
Mm. And kind of based on what you've seen and obviously interacting with educators around the world, do you think schools are reacting in that kind of careful way that you've described?
It's very mixed. I mean, I know from visiting Gobinda at the school in Dubai that certainly his school and other schools within the Nord Anglia family are being very careful about how they adopt these technologies. But globally, you see huge variation. It's not even at all. Even within a single school, you can have teachers who are using the technology very creatively, innovatively in lots of different ways, and teachers who haven't yet started yet. So there's huge amounts of variation in different countries, in different regions, but even within the same institution, not everybody's exactly on the same page, so to speak. And again, that's why having an approach whereby you are thinking carefully about how to help teachers, how to help leaders, how to help students get to grips with these tools, as we are doing here, is exactly the right approach to adopt to try and make sure that everybody can get the best from these technologies.
So Gobinda, I'm going to bring you into the conversation here because obviously you are kind of at the coalface, if you like, in the school itself. What's the situation in your school and in other schools that maybe you're familiar with in the UAE?
Yeah, so as a computer science teacher, one of the things that is a common misconception is that AI started in the end of 2022, early 2023, where in fact it was already in the students' pockets from many, many years before that, where you have Siri, you might have the Amazon Alexa. And I think that there was initially that excitement across the education sector where a lot of teachers and a lot of students kind of jumped in and were like, oh, this is a new toy. What can we do with it? Oh, it's helping me do X, Y, and Z really, really fast. Then what you see sort of early 2024 to now, a lot of schools have stepped back and really thought about their approach. And we're finding more and more schools that are doing that and really thinking about not the actual tools that they're going to use or planning to use or are using. They're actually thinking about the policies and the procedures and the sort of the risk assessment side in terms of AI and how AI can support the student's journey. That's what I'm seeing in terms of the education sector.
And in terms of kind of students using AI already right now, today, what does that look like? I mean, do you find that students are kind of mostly just experimenting, dipping in and out, or are some already kind of heavily relying on AI tools?
There is a small percentage that see AI as a reliance in terms of completing work. However, there are those students who are concerned in terms of their future. They are concerned in terms of where AI is, where it's going to end up, and are they prepared enough for the workplace in the future? And understandably so. I mean, my son is in year 9. I've got an elder son in first year of university, and he's doing computer science with AI. And I've spoke to him about at length about Google LM. I've spoke to him about Claude and looking at skills and looking at MCPs, etc. And he's really thinking, and he's worried about my younger son in terms of how the job market might look in the future. So it is a mixed bag in terms of where students are. And I think in terms of schools, in terms of what currently students are doing, a lot of students in sort of at the younger age groups, they are experimenting in year 9, 10, 11, 12 in terms of what can AI do for me? How can it support my learning? And at our school, we've got over 42 students in the AI working party. And those were some of the questions that they put to Rose in the classroom when she came to visit, and they were worried, and they were talking about how can they utilize AI for the future, and how can they use it correctly, and how do they protect the other students who may not have the desire or the want to sort of really look in themselves and look at AI as a sort of like a support mechanism rather than a shortcut tool, which is what most kids are sort of viewing it as a shortcut tool. And we've got to try and educate the students not to think of it as a shortcut tool, but as a tool to support their learning journey.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll get into the kind of the whole how AI is impacting the job market a little bit further down the line. But Rose, I wanted to get your opinion on what I think when AI kind of first appeared, or certainly the AI that we're all now all familiar with. I think it's safe to say that some schools kind of quickly jumped and tried to ban it entirely. What's your opinion of that? Is banning AI realistic? Is it even desirable to do that?
It's really interesting, that question, and I'm just going to unpack it a bit, because the point Govinda made is really important about the difference between the generative AI tools that have caused all of the commotion, if you like, you know, November 2022, ChatGPT, and I talked about the speed of adoption, and other forms of AI, which have been around for many, many decades. And the real challenge are the generative AI tools, because they're the ones that are more risky. And that comes to your point about banning. All forms of AI have some risks, but generative AI tools like the chatbots come with more risk. And so it's important to remember that when we think about these tools. Now, on the positive side, I think the existence of these generative AI tools has engaged people in a conversation about AI that we needed to have, and has made people recognize other forms of AI that they might be using that are actually incredibly useful. So it's important to remember that there are tools that are not generative AI tools, that are AI tools that are less risky and incredibly useful, particularly in education. But the real conversation about banning or not banning is really focused on these generative AI tools. And a lot of that is to do with academic integrity and concern about students using them to complete work and therefore not engaging with the learning activity themselves. And that's something we absolutely need to think about and be careful about. But I'm not sure that banning is the right way forward, because what we need to recognize is students are going to have jobs, are going to have lives that will involve AI. So if we ban the tools, then that's not necessarily helping them to engage with technologies that are going to be a fundamental part of their lives. I think much better is to be very clear about what the parameters for appropriate use are for those technologies, for those students when they're at school. But we also need to recognize that we need to help them to understand enough about these technologies so that they can use them effectively when they're outside school as well. So I don't think banning is the way forward, but I do think responsible use is absolutely the way forward. And having policies where the parameters are clear about what acceptable use is are important. Equally, helping students to understand enough about the tools that they can be critical users of them, both within school and outside school.
Mm. And kind of touching upon the kind of the critical use of the AI tools, and what should schools actually be teaching students about AI? What are the kind of the key considerations, the most important things that we need to be educating them?
I think in terms of the generative AI tools in particular, we need to help students recognize that these tools are not intelligent, as the name suggests, in the way that we are intelligent. They are very large pattern matching machines that can work incredibly quickly and do useful things, but they don't understand what they produce and they have no experience of the world. So we should also always look at what they produce with a critical eye, not just take it and assume it's correct. We should engender within our students the habit of always asking, how do I know this is right? What makes me think this is right? If I'm using this tool, and here's a core test for anybody using any of these AI tools, you know, we should be always asking ourselves, is this tool making me smarter? Is it making me think harder? Is it helping me to achieve more? Am I learning? Or is it just helping me to complete a task? Because there's a really big difference between those two things. So we need all of our students to have that critical engagement with the AI tools they use and to always be asking themselves, is this making me work harder intellectually? Am I able to do more because I'm using this? And fundamentally, am I learning? Do I understand more because I'm using this tool? Not have I been able to produce more things more quickly?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you said, it probably resonates with not just with young people and students, but with all of us, to be honest. I mean, even if I take myself as an example, you know, I've been using LLMs maybe for the last 12, 18 months. And it's kind of alarming to see how quickly I kind of now turn to AI to, you know, help me with all sorts of different tasks and answer questions and so forth. And it kind of begs the question, well, is it making me lazy? Is it making me, you know, stupid even, you know? So what do you think is there a real danger that kind of AI replaces that thinking and the very thinking that kind of builds and maintains your intelligence?
That is a key question, and it's one that we're seeing coming through in a lot of evidence and data at the moment. There are multiple research studies that demonstrate that if we don't use the AI wisely, then inappropriate cognitive offloading, as we would call it, in other words, we get the AI to do things we should be doing, and we don't engage in thinking in that intellectual activity when we use the tools. There is absolutely a risk of that happening, which is why it's really important that we help students understand what it means to use these tools effectively to achieve more, not just to be able to achieve the same, but faster. And I think the work that's being done within Nord Anglia on things like metacognition is really important here, because building up those sophisticated thinking and learning skills and capabilities like metacognition increases the likelihood that students will already be questioning the extent to which they are learning. What have they learned? What do they now understand? And so that also encourages that more productive, effective use of the tools. But it is a risk, and we need to recognize it. And that's why, you know, having programs such as the Metacognition Research Program are really important as all parts of this engaging with AI. I mean, AI can be a really powerful tool for helping you to be more sophisticated in your thinking and learning. It really can. It can help you achieve more, understand more, but it involves hard work, hard thinking, effort in order to get that result. Whereas I think the challenge for us as educators is that a lot of the hype and media around these tools, these generative AI tools in particular, give the suggestion that it's going to make things easier.
Mm. Absolutely. I'm very pleased that you mentioned that kind of metacognition piece of research, because that was something that, for the benefit of our listeners, something that Nord Anglia Education kind of conducted this, I think, two-year bit of research with together with Boston College in the US. And that very much kind of highlighted that importance of teaching students essentially how they think and how that then relates to kind of AI. So Gobinda, coming to you, I know that your school was kind of very much involved in that piece of research. Does AI make kind of metacognitive skills more crucial than ever? Would you agree with that?
I mean, we in the IB, in one of the option C, it's called Web Science. And within that unit, we look at CSS, HTML, and the way web pages are actually built. And we did a little experiment with GPT and getting GPT to create a HTML file. We did the same with Claude. We did the same with Google AI Studio. And we had a really nice discussion with the Year 13s in terms of why is it that Claude would build their artifacts in a certain style using certain frameworks, using certain colors. Google is always standardized with these certain colors and these certain frameworks, and then GPT has their own frameworks, or that they're always sort of like spitting out. And we talked about and we researched that there's many other frameworks, but yet the bias in that output is already putting these programmers who are these year 13 students who are looking at the sort of the back end of these web pages. They're like, why is it that these three AIs are always using these frameworks when there's many other frameworks out there? Then we went into the whole the training data in terms of what training data have they been or have they had access to. And it just sort of went on into like a really, really good discussion with the year 13s in terms of generative AI is only as good as the training data that's been given to it.
So, Rose, what would you say does responsible AI use look like in a school setting, in a classroom setting today? And if AI is used well, what can it improve in terms of education?
And this is the key thing, isn't it, in education that we want to understand. So I think responsible use looks like purpose-driven use. And that purpose is clearly about increasing capability. Now, that might be in the back office about activities such as producing newsletters or other activities that don't actually involve working with students directly, in which case the capability is more about productivity. And I think it's important to recognize that actually a lot of ways in which educators are using AI tools is not necessarily with their students. It's to help with preparation of materials. It might be to help with looking at exactly what's happening in the data. You know, where are students excelling? Where are their challenges? It's not necessarily student facing. So that's important to remember as well. So when we come to student facing use of AI, it's all about that purpose. And I think Gobinda's example is really interesting within that specific field of computer science, you know, looking at ethics and responsible use and how the tools work. Absolutely. But let's take a subject like English. Now, it may be that actually English teachers say, no, actually, we're not going to use AI enormously in our subject because actually we really want that productive struggle of students thinking about how to write something, the words they're going to use, because that's part of the learning, thinking about how they understand something. But this, and that's not technophobia, that's being responsible, holding a pedagogical position, and then thinking about, okay, but how can we bring AI in? Maybe we can use it to stimulate discussion. Maybe we can use it to offer multiple different perspectives on the same piece of writing. So it's really about thinking clearly, what is the purpose that we are using this AI tool for? And if that is as part of the teaching and learning process, how is that pedagogically grounded? How do we know that this is going to be good for the students? How do we know that it's going to help them to learn something clearly, deeply, gain a capability, develop a skill? So it's always about that purpose. And that's what's really important. Now, obviously, responsible use also includes sticking to the policy that's in place that sets those parameters, which are about the ethics and governance. That's part of it. But importantly, within those parameters, it's about having that very, very clear purpose and making sure that the way that you use the technologies is absolutely aligned with that purpose, and that you are constantly evaluating the extent to which the technology is actually helping you to achieve that purpose. That's sometimes something that we forget, that kind of closing the loop. Okay, I'm going to use it to do this because I believe it's going to increase my students' capability to write a good essay, analyze a poem, understand the water cycle, whatever it is that you're doing, and then checking that actually the way that these technologies are being used has genuinely helped you in that endeavor. So it's about purpose and ensuring that the purpose that you have carefully thought through is being achieved successfully.
Mm. And I suppose that also has a huge impact then also on how we assess students and assessment in schools. And if we know that our students are using and leaning on AI, then, you know, to what extent can we can we, you know, look at how, look at their progress and their academic outcomes? So Gobinda, what does assessment look like at your school from your perspective? Has it been impacted by the advent of AI, or is it kind of unchanged?
I think that the biggest impact is the coursework. The coursework is the biggest impact. And I think when a student uses AI to generate a piece of text, it's very difficult. I'll be honest, it's very difficult for a teacher to see what the signs are. There are many signs. There are many signs. If you, as a teacher, if you're looking at the previous classwork in terms of how the student writes and looking at key patterns in terms of spelling, language and structure of a sentence and comparing that with a statement from a student. And then you've got the little formatting nuances that AI normally brings out, like the M dashes or in a Word document. If a student uses AI to create a Word document, what AI normally does, it creates this little subsection with a little arrow. So when you hover the mouse over it, it minimizes the whole section of writing. So that's a clear indicator. It's a very difficult subject to, or a very difficult topic to manage at the moment, because a lot of teachers aren't trained in terms of spotting everything that AI could spit out. And then you have different AIs that are purposely built to tackle that, where a student will upload their piece of work and you have this AI that's been engineered to hide those nuances, to make it look like they have written it. Things like the Humanizer, and there are some really popular apps that the students are using. Even the extensions on Chrome. I had a little play around with the Claude extension, and I had it. I completed the Claude 101 a couple of, I think it was last year when the old one came out. And at the end, they have this multiple choice question at the end of the 101. And it's a very, it's not a deep course. It just tells you about the different things that Claude can do, how to prompt, what is Claude code. And I got Claude to fill out the questions at the end and do the whole test for me. And it did it, and it got 100%. And it didn't pick up that it was its own AI that was doing that test. So, I mean, those are things that teachers will need to start looking out for. I'm a very strong advocate of paper-based assessments, old school tests. I'm a big fan of that. And I am a big fan of development projects, physical projects, but in a timed, in a sort of like a class environment where it's done in class, in a supervised manner with the teacher. I think traditional coursework, as they have been, I think we're going to find it as an education institution, we're going to find it very, very difficult to manage and to spot plagiarism.
I think it's really important that everybody understands that there will be no foolproof AI detection tool. Yeah, and that's exactly what Gobinda's demonstrated, you know, when he did the course, he got Claude to answer it and Claude didn't recognise its own use. You know, there are lots of signifiers, but again, there are also equally loads of tools that will help you hide the fact that you've used AI. So there's not a way to, in any foolproof way, detect that somebody has definitely used AI. And I think the assessment question is a really interesting one. Now, obviously, there are summative assessments, exams, tests that are set by outside bodies that, you know, as schools, we don't necessarily have any control over, and they will change as they will change. But certainly in terms of formative assessments and coursework that we're in charge of designing, we can reframe them to make the use of AI less useful. You know, and then it really comes down to the fundamental question that I was really alluding to earlier. You know, is what I'm asking the student to do really testing their understanding and if they have learnt? Because if it is, then using AI
won't necessarily help them. Or if they are using AI to help them learn, that's fine. Do you see what I mean? So it's about the way we frame the assessments that make learning essential, so that you can't step away and let the AI do it for you. It has to be something that involves demonstrating that you have learned, that you have understood, that you've applied that knowledge and understanding, perhaps. So it's really thinking through very carefully what it means to assess the extent somebody has learned and has understood, rather than to assess the way that they've produced an artifact, a piece of work, because that's where the AI comes in. So it does need, and we are thinking these difficult questions through as to how do we make sure that the way that we ask students to complete work genuinely demonstrates the extent to which they have or have not understood something. So I think that's a very live question, and something that is an ongoing point of discussion in many, many education institutions across the world.
And are schools working together with exam boards and, you know, on this question? Or
absolutely, yes. There's a lot of collaborative working with exam boards, with schools, with education systems, trying to ensure that we get the right outcome for students, for educators, so that actually we don't allow these AI tools to do the work for students, and that it doesn't, you know, interestingly, if you actually look at the data, you will find that you might think that within schools such as those in the Nord Anglia chain, that it would be the less able students who would use these AI tools. But actually, that's not always the case. Often it's students who are very anxious about their performance. And so it's not just a challenge around detection. It's actually a challenge for all of us to think, oh, okay, these students are really anxious about getting the right marks. How can we kind of reduce the anxiety as well as help them to use the tools responsibility? As with so many things in life, and particularly in education, it's not a simple answer. It's needing to understand more about what's going on here, but always asking the question, are we evaluating the extent to which this student has genuinely understood what it is we want them to understand?
How significant do you think AI's impact on the job market will be over the next, say, 10 years?
I think the impact of AI on the job market will be significant, but perhaps not in exactly the ways that we perceive it. Again, the data is really interesting. If you take something specific like software engineering, which, you know, and software development, where we're seeing a lot of changes and a lot of talk about, oh, well, we don't need software developers anymore because we've now got tools like Claude Code and Cursor that can do a lot of the work, you know, that software developers used to do. But actually, if you look at the data on jobs, the number of job opportunities for software developers and engineers has actually increased. But that's what we want them to do is different. And I think that's an interesting example. So it's not the number of jobs specifically, it's that what people are being required to do is changing. And so that's where I think we'll see the significant change. If you take the law profession, we're seeing a lot of AI use within the law profession. Again, it's changing the nature of the jobs that are available. I do think that we're seeing increasingly and reliable data that entry-level jobs are challenged. And so we need to think that through carefully. But even then, I think it's as much about the nature of the role as the number of those roles that exist. Of course, some jobs are more accessible to AI, shall we say. But even if you take a job, say, plumbing, that you would think, well, AI doesn't really come into plumbing. But actually, if I'm going to be a plumber, I probably do get some benefit from using AI tools to help me understand doing some diagnostics that use some AI, for example, if there's a particular problem that I can't see physically and I need to explore a network of pipes, for example. Or if I'm setting up a business as a plumber, I might want to use AI in my customer-facing materials, in my marketing materials. I might want to use these tools to help me analyze the most recent research and innovation in the world of plumbing. Do you see what I mean? So you can pick a job that feels like, oh, well, it won't ever have anything to do with AI, but actually it will. So it's about the changing nature of the jobs that exist as much as it is about certain jobs disappearing altogether. And it's a complex picture. And often the data itself, as I say, you need to look into in more detail to really understand what's going on.
I've spoken to quite a few. I have my brother-in-law who's a builder, and I have an uncle who's a plumber. And I used AI to support me in terms of my car breaking down. So I took a picture of the engine of my car, and I diagnosed the problem. I told it what the issue was. And it said that there was something wrong with the thermostat, and it gave me instructions on how to undo it all and replace the thermostat. And every time I would take pictures and pop it into AI and say, have I done this correctly? And it said it would. I know my brother-in-law used AI to take a picture of, it was the it was like the back of the bathroom in a house that he was renovating. He took a picture and it planned out the most appropriate way that the pipes should go up the wall, thus saving him money in copper. And it even gave him a shopping list of which connections to have and what kind of lengths they should be. And even the builders in the building trade, when you're putting together an invoice and putting together the sort of the materials that you need and the quantity that you need, using that to create an invoice and really be effective with your sort of like your profit and your loss and managing it even more efficiently, that's where AI is helping in those sort of hands-on jobs.
Do you think it's therefore, you know, is it still sensible to kind of plan for a specific job, or is it more about actually developing, you know, adaptability and kind of softer skills, if you like? What are they more key?
I think soft skills and adaptability is high on that list in terms of what we're doing in schools. We aren't teaching the students a pathway to a specific job. We are giving them experiences that are beyond the curriculum. We do a QA GCSE, we have the A level, we have the IB. And within my department, we actually have a secondary curriculum which sits alongside the computer science journey, whether they are thinking about game design, whether they are thinking about networking, whether they are thinking about law and looking at data protection, looking at business and how IT systems work within businesses. We do try and give them those experiences so they still have, at the end of their journey, enough experience in such a broad range in terms of the computer science ecosystem that they can make a more informed decision of their pathway in terms of where their interests are. And vice versa in science, in DT, they do the same. In DT, we have it's a DT and computer science curriculum. In year 7, year 8, we call it DICE, which is Design, Innovation, Computing and Enterprise, where it's a holistic curriculum for year 7s and year 8s, where we combine all four topics and we look at creating products, taking a product, going through a product's life cycle, using technology, using design to create this product, to market this product, to finance and look at how we can bring it to market. That is what we're doing in sort of year 7, year 8. So we're always thinking about that holistic framework of the child in terms of really giving them those life experiences. So they are better prepared for the future, because I'll be honest, we're saying, and we say every 5 to 10 years, we always prepare students for jobs that don't exist. And in terms of like, let's say 5 years ago or 10 years ago, we kind of knew that the jobs nowadays would have some element of AI. There is a slight fear from me as a parent that with the speed of where AI is going in the last 2 years, I don't know what kind of jobs there will be. And it's very scary as a parent, but I think as a human race and as an education institution, I think the best we prepare students to be adaptable, to be resilient and persevere in those sort of like everyday problems, individual case by case, brick walls, if you will, that they hit.
Sure.
That they will be fine. We worked out okay. So I think we'll be fine.
I think that holistic approach is absolutely right. Look, you know, one can predict with some degree of certainty, although not 100% certainty, what the technology is likely to be able to do in 3, 5, 10 years with reducing certainty. But what you cannot predict is how humans will adopt, appropriate, use, develop the way they use these tools. And that's what makes things very unpredictable. So you cannot predict with any degree of certainty precisely what it is you need to know in 3 years' time or 5 years' time. But what you can predict is that you need students to be really good at learning. That will always be the case. You know, so what you need is to help build within students. And this is where things like the metacognition approach comes in very strongly. And what Kaminda's talking about, you know, that holistic approach is helping students understand themselves as learners, as they are understanding the world through what they're learning, understand how they learn, how they can learn in the future, accepting that they're going to need to be lifelong learners because we can't predict exactly what they need to know, and feeling comfortable with that, feeling okay that actually, no, I can't predict that I'm going to be this kind of a, you know, I'm going to be a particular, fulfill a particular sort of role necessarily, and feel okay about the fact that things will change and new opportunities will come along, and being good at learning or being flexible and agile will help them get the most from the opportunities that come their way. So we can say that with some degree of certainty. We can identify the sort of future skills, capabilities that students will need, and that's where to focus attention, because we can have some certainty about that. And certainly the kind of approach Kaminda's described, and that is absolutely kind of what I see in every North Anglia school I visit, you know, this attention to helping students understand themselves as learners and become exceptional learners is at the heart of what's going on. And that's absolutely what will help students have the best possible opportunities in the future.
So I just, as we kind of begin to wrap up, I wanted to kind of bring it back to maybe our primary audience, which is parents. And Rose, are you kind of, what are you seeing parents worry about when it comes to AI? I don't know if you have direct discussions with families and things, but and would you say, I mean, are those concerns justified? Are they overblown? Are they misplaced? What are parents kind of really worried about, and what are your thoughts on that?
I think it's understandable that as parents, I'm a parent, I'm a grandparent. You know, Govinda's referred to the fact, you know, he's a parent. We are parents as well as educators. And I can certainly understand why parents could be concerned about how these technologies impact on their child. In particular, that question about how do they impact on the kinds of jobs that will be available? Should we go to university? All these questions are perfectly reasonable. And obviously, also, how as parents do we support our children to get the best from these technologies? How do we protect them from the risks? These are all perfectly reasonable questions. And the vast majority of parents who I meet are asking very reasonable questions about exactly how they can assure that their child thrives in the future, because that's what we all want, isn't it? And that means that we do have to acknowledge there are risks so that we can mitigate them. And we have to know that there are opportunities so that we can leverage them. And that's where we have to get that balance right, so that we can say, right, okay, we understand the risks, we're mitigating those, and this means that we can now leverage these technologies, leverage new ways of learning, and feel that we're absolutely on the front foot when it comes to ensuring that, you know, your children are exceptional learners and helping them to have the best chance of thriving in the future. And it doesn't matter where I am in the world. Whenever I talk to parents, that's, of course, what they want. And I think their, you know, concerns are largely totally understandable and reasonable.
Okay, excellent. Govinda, as a kind of a wrap-up, based on your experience of interacting with students and things, what gives you confidence about the generation of students growing up with AI?
A lot of young students, and I'll take it back to when I was young, in terms of adapting to new technology and using new talent technology, and the speed at which the students are taking to AI, like in most cases, like ducks to water, in terms of how to even use it effectively. In terms of where I see students, I think as long as we instill good habits in them as schools, and they grow up with those habits, they will have a journey that will really support them for the future. But I think with schools, we need to really think about our AI policies. We need to think about our ethical use of AI, whether there are situations whether AI is even used at all. And going back to Rose's earlier comments, there are so many situations where we actually don't need to use AI. Even in computer science, there are situations where we do not need to use AI to ask a question, to do research, to create a task or anything like that. And to really think about that AI is just another tool, and it's there to support us and to really critically analyze whether the use of AI is going to support us in that particular task. And I think that's where we are at. And I have got high hopes with for the current generation, because they have the capability to use technology effectively, and they have sort of like us who are really thinking about the sort of the benefits of AI, the use and the ethics and everything that needs to be thought about at that abstract point as well.
Okay, that's great to hear. That is very good to hear. I think if there's one kind of one theme running through this conversation that we've had today, it's kind of that, you know, AI doesn't make education less important. It actually raises the stake. It's quite the opposite, isn't it? So it's great that we're kind of thinking very carefully about that. Rose Kabinda, I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining
Pleasure.
Us. It's been a really fascinating discussion.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting
Thank
me.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Learning Curve. For more thoughtful conversations about education, parenting, and growing up in today's world, hit subscribe to follow the podcast wherever you listen.